Welcome to Pathways to Heart podcast series presented by the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning at Sophia University. Sophia University is located in California and offers students a unique educational experience rooted in transformative, transpersonal education. The Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning supports transformative education by creating engaged leaders and learners through resources, trainings, and events. This podcast series focuses on critical emerging issues in our communities. Today's podcast is a discussion with Dr. Fred Luskin. Dr. Luskin founded and currently serves as director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects. For 10 years, he created and taught the Happiness Class based on positive psychology, as well as co-founded the Life Works and Wellness Education programs at Stanford School of Medicine. He is on faculty for the Stanford School of Business Executive Education program, where he teaches a series on mindfulness and happiness to business executives from all over the world. Here, Dr. Luskin shares his perspective on the value of forgiveness. He is interviewed by Dr. John Elfers. So welcome, Dr. Luskin, and thank you for sharing your experience with us on this important topic of forgiveness. And I just wanted to open up by inviting you to share, what is it that drew you to this topic? How did you get to forgiveness?
You know, John, it's both simple, direct, and broad. For many years, I had an interest in spirituality. I became a yoga teacher way back in the day, started a meditation practice like 40 years ago, and even owned a hippie vegetarian restaurant in Santa Cruz, you know, back in the 80s. So I just have a long whatever in like Eastern spirituality. So that's been a driver of what the heck I'm doing in this world. And the forgiveness piece came in part because I had been really badly hurt and didn't know how to forgive, so I had to dig myself out of that, and that was awful. It was painful. Anyway, and I needed a dissertation topic when I was getting my doctorate at Stanford. I wanted to do something that was an intervention study but on a spiritual quality, and I wanted to show at some level that this new agey, hippy-dippy stuff was actually true. And if it wasn't true, then that was good to know too. You know, if meditation didn't make a difference, or if being compassionate and kind didn't have any impact, well, it would be nice to know that these religions are full of garbage. But my belief system was that they were good and that they needed real research to affirm the like physical, emotional benefits of their practice.
Yeah, thank you. So I had a suspicion that there was some personal connection here with this topic. So given that, can you share a little bit about what you've learned about models of forgiveness based on your personal experience of forgiveness and your academic experience and research and study?
I mean, there are religious models of forgiveness. You know, you do so because God wants you to, or that, you know, Jesus tells you to forgive everyone, and most religions have some place in there to forswear grudges. You know, there's kind of secular models. You forgive because it's good for your mental health, and you forgive for its benefit on you as a material being. I mean, I'm also enamored with the science of it. You know, the sheer understanding of its impact, what are some of the correlates of it, and are there like mediating factors? You know, I like the science of it. My own belief between the religious and the secular is that distinction doesn't matter very much, that that there is religious coping and there's secular coping, and I'm not sure that they are as different as people think. I was involved in a study, a friend of mine who is a forgiveness researcher in a like a Lutheran college in Iowa. He did a forgiveness research project where he taught my forgiveness teaching and compared it to a Christian forgiveness teaching, did a randomized trial with students, and found that at the end result, they both worked kind of equally well. The students preferred mine because it was simpler, that they didn't have to deal with metaphysics. But the end result was, if you practiced and you worked at it, you could forgive.
Oh, it's interesting that there was not that distinction. You know, I hear a lot about the role of forgiveness as being something that's truly transformative for a person. That
can be.
You know, all the processes that someone goes through. Can you say anything about that? In what way is forgiveness really transformative for a person?
Well, you go from victim to something else, and that's a major transformation. So unforgiveness tends to be a kind of stance of helplessness, of low efficacy. I can't move past this. Or somebody else or my past is responsible for my current suffering. Those are very low efficacy positions, which lead to blame, and blame leads to health problems. So when you give that up and you say, hey, even though I may have been wounded, I'm not necessarily a victim. I'm somebody who has learned to cope with life. That's a huge transformation. And it can spread to other things, you know, where, oh, okay, so I don't have to identify as a helpless recipient of life. I can identify as someone who learned to cope with life. Secondly, it can transform relationships. So if you're married or you have long-standing relationships, every relationship comes with difficulties.
Yes. Right, yes.
So if you want to have low efficacy in relationship, then don't forgive. You know what I'm saying? That and so it's an important quality for moving ahead with one's life and being able to like without prejudice handle what life has given to us and be able to have hope for the future. Because we can cope with our life. Those are powerful statements that forgiveness opens us up to.
Yeah, it does seem like, yeah, that transformation is one of coming from a place of being in a victim stance or being stuck to one of much more empowerment, a lot more taking control, and that being associated probably with many gains in mental health. One of the things I hear a question a lot, and something that kind of runs through my mind at times, is the distinction between true forgiveness and not condoning the behavior that precipitated the insult or all that. That is there a dance? Is there, what is that dance between, you know, being able to forgive someone but also not condoning the behavior? Because I think there can be some confusion there.
I mean, whether we condone behavior or not, it really doesn't matter as much as we think, because things happen and our opinion about them is less important than we like to give it credence to. I mean, so, but the true definition of forgiveness does not include condoning. What it does say is that something happened that I don't believe was the right thing to happen. Now that my opinion is out about it, I don't have to attend so strongly to that opinion, and I can figure out how I move on both from the consequences of the event and the consequences of my opinion. So you can judge 1990, but who cares? You know what I mean? It's like it's 30 years ago. You can judge your parents, but it doesn't really mean that much. It's just, at some level, wasted space in your current experience, throwing your opinion around about all these things that happened in the past. But forgiveness says, no, at that time I thought it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was cruel, or maybe it was just something I didn't want to deal with. And all that is part of my first response, which is it's not what I wanted. Then I have to move on from that. Because at some level, any maturity is recognizing that life has things you don't want and don't like, and you have to deal with them. And constantly saying that I don't want and don't like them doesn't really mean very much.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, it's easy to get in these thought loops of blaming and pointing the finger. And I think over time, what can happen, I know at least in some of my experiences, of getting to a point of realizing that my inability to forgive isn't changing the situation. It isn't hurting the other person. I'm the one who's suffering. I'm the one who I'm in these thought loops. I'm continuing to blame, you know, someone else. And so there can be, I guess I'm assuming, is there kind of some major release or something with that comes with, you know, realizing that I'm the one that's suffering, and part of forgiving is letting go of that process?
The metaphor that we came up with was like, if you or somebody else is in a bad situation about something that happened, the metaphor was like either your group and their group, or you and another person, you went to a multiplex and you watch different movies. And then you come out of the multiplex and argue about whose movie was right. And people can spend decades arguing about whose movie is right. Mm-hmm. But we see different movies and we're constantly trying to convince people that our movie is the right one. So it's a very disempowering place. Mm-hmm. It's a conviction that the story I'm telling myself, the pictures that I have, are the only ones, and that they don't require any movement on my part to grow past my original impression. And that's simply bad living. I mean, if you want to have an optimal life, that's not the way to do it. What we have suggested over the years is to say certain things happen that may be outside of my ability to cope with, that may be outside of my picture of how my life should have unfolded. And it may be really challenging for me to normalize that and make it part of my identity, but that's my work. And so having an opinion about being wrong is kind of trivial. I mean, after, I'm not saying you get there in like 2 weeks, but if something bad really happened, after a while you have to absorb that and move on from the limitation of thinking that this simply being wrong in my book is sufficient. It's a beginning place. It's not an ending place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just because they didn't watch the same movie, well, that's a, you know, there's a lot of movies out there.
Yeah, I love that analogy. That's great. You know, it sounds like the process of forgiveness is one, it is a process, right? And it can be transformative. It may take a while. And in that space between whatever happens and the forgiveness itself, there's a lot of growth that's happening. There, you know, here you say, you know, using the word coping, like I have to be able to maybe cope in some other way. I have to learn to surrender, to let go of, you know, whatever baggage I'm holding on to. Yeah, it seems like implicit just in that process of forgiveness, there's a lot, tremendous growth and changing.
People pick it up when they get tired of suffering and recognize that they're contributing to the suffering by not being willing to move on. And what the biggest spur is, I don't want to be stuck in my own like juice forever.
Mm-hmm.
You go for a while thinking that I can change the world, then you realize you can't. Then you get stuck in a while in self-pity, and then you realize that doesn't work. And then you may stay angry for a while, and then you realize that doesn't work. And after a while, you realize, some people realize that I have to find some other way to deal with this because this ain't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when more people than anything choose to look at forgiveness. The researchers suggest that there's both like decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness. So you make a decision to let it go, and then it takes a while before the heart and the mind, they get the memo. But it starts with a decision.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so the distinction, I love the distinction between decisional and then emotional. I imagine the emotional, of course, is much harder as we, you know, in our intimate relationships, you know, we feel insulted or something, and then we hold a little grudge for a while. And at some point, yeah, we have to let go. We realize maybe our close intimate relationship is suffering because I can't let go of that supposed insult that, or what I interpreted as an insult. And so I'm stuck. There's that stuckness that happens. Yeah, that makes sense. I love those metaphors. I have a question about how do you characterize the distinction between forgiveness of self and forgiveness of others? Is there a difference? What are the dynamics there?
The biggest difference is that you can influence yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth about forgiving others is that you had no control over their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no control to force them to do anything now that they don't choose to do.
Right.
So there's a humility and a, let's say, a serenity prayer approach when you're forgiving others or the past or something because it happened without your approval. The distinction between that and forgiving oneself is you can change.
Mm-hmm.
You can make amends for what you've done. You can apologize. and you can grow. So forgiveness of self generally requires some action before we, like the forgiveness of releasing negativity when it comes to self doesn't mean very much. It's not that important. What's important to forgiveness of self is, like, have I really admitted the harm I've done?
Mm.
Have I made amends where I can?
Mm-hmm.
Have I apologized to myself or others? And have I done things so that I won't do it again? If those conditions are met, then there's no reason any longer to be upset with oneself.
Yeah.
Because it's like you broke a bottle of something and you cleaned it up. The problem is with other people, you can't force them to clean up their mess.
Right. Yeah, so in situations, say, yeah, I can really appreciate the importance of making amends for what one has done in the past. If I'm in a situation where I can't really go back, say it was a long time ago, I've been holding on to this, you know, the people, you know, are not available to do that. Is there value in as part of my reflective work of, you know, admitting to myself what I did, but then also having a pay it forward attitude to where,
yes, absolutely,
you know, yeah.
John, you are so right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I remember once a woman came into one of my classes years ago and was saying that she was a bad parent, but that her kids will not forgive her. Like, that, you know, she was probably in her late 50s, mm-hmm. and her kids were grown, and they didn't have that much contact with her because they weren't in a forgiving mood. And like, she was wondering, what do I do with this? And I said, well, you know, if you've told your children you're sorry, if you've asked them what you can do to make it right, if inside of you, you really acknowledge that you were in the wrong, it's not like there was extenuating circumstances or the moon wasn't in the right phase or any other nonsense, mm-hmm. but you did wrong and you tell them that. And then they don't let you off the hook. And I said, you're done. But you still may owe the world something. So if your kids won't let you back into their lives, volunteer once a week at a local elementary school and spend an hour there and read to somebody else's kids. Like, that's the restitution that is helpful.
Yeah, that's part of the transformation. Right, that's a great example, because I can't really influence, say, you know, what my kids are going to do, whether they forgive me or not. That's really that's their work. I like the fact that there's some really concrete things, you know, that a person can do to really facilitate their own forgiveness, that it's not limited by, you know, past circumstances, very active in the present. I can become a new person. I can let go of that old stuff and keep beating myself up. I think whatever I'm forgiving myself for is probably something I've been beating myself up for a while. So, okay, time to let that go. And then it opens up an opportunity for something else to come flowing in.
The way I look at it is, with self-forgiveness, it's important to clean up our messes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a critical skill. You don't want to leave this life leaving behind a lot of hurt and woundedness if you don't have to.
Yeah, I'm really reminded of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They really, very early on in the process, there's two steps. One, a fearless moral inventory. Those are some strong words, you know, to do a fearless moral inventory of my past grievances. And then the next one, or soon thereafter, is one of, you know, making amends to those people, and how important that process is in the transformation of forgiveness. People, and you know, that I've known in Alcoholics Anonymous maybe come in with a lot of shame for what they have done. Shame is a very much an emotion that goes along with a lot of the history of, you know, substance use. So that's a great example there. Yeah.
It's an absolutely pointless emotion. It's do something.
Yes.
Help somebody. Make the world a better place. Shame is, I'm going to say, it's self-indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong directional. If you've done harm, do good.
Yes.
Admit you're wrong. Learn to let other people be wrong. Develop more pro-social skills. Shame's a dead end.
Yeah. And it's such a prevalent emotion at the same time. It's amazing, yeah, how easy it is to get stuck in those cycles and continue, you know, a kind of self-perpetuating shame. Now, I am curious, what does the research show in terms of the correlation between forgiveness and other aspects of mental health or well-being? Are there is the literature very supportive on that? What does it say?
It's very related to gratitude, that more grateful people forgive. That's one of the findings. It tends to be easier as you get older, that people become a little more forgiving, even though older people are more bimodal than younger people. So you have a larger group of older people who are, hey, what can I do about the past? I'm going to be dead soon. But you have another group of old people who say, hey, you've messed with me enough in this life. Nobody F's with me again. So they coalesce around their bitterness. But on the whole, forgiveness is easier as you get older. It's one of the key contributors to a successful marriage.
Oh, really? Interesting.
There are only a handful of traits that relate to long, successful, intimate partnership, and forgiveness is in their top 5 or top 10, because you can't be in a long relationship without both people annoying the heck out of each other and doing some really stupid things in a long path. And if you can't forgive, you can't do this.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I can see, holding grudges for a long time, I can see that being pretty disastrous. And that sort of is consistent with what I understand of, you know, some of the research on, you know, what predicts divorce in a marriage. Attitudes of, you know, resentment and not being able to let go. That makes sense.
But it's not just not being let go. It's the affirmative quality of forgiving that is a lubricant for successful relationships. And the people who have successful relationships tend to talk about and agree, you know, we learn to forgive each other.
And what do you mean by affirming form? How would you define that? What would be an example?
When I speak to healthy long-term couples and I talk about forgiveness, they look at each other and go, yeah.
Okay.
You know, we had to do that. That's separate from the research. But they learn that if they wanted to make it last 30, 40, 50 years, they were going to have to forgive.
Right. Yeah, otherwise I would imagine the accumulated baggage of not forgiving would start to get pretty heavy pretty quickly. Yeah.
It does. It does. And it distorts perception, because once you have a grievance mentality, then you see life through that grievance, and it becomes distorted, because then you lose sight of the good. The grievance starts clouding it out. And that's one of the reasons it's such a death knell to relationship.
Mm. Is there an association with more compassion in relationships, the relationship between forgiveness and compassion?
I don't know that. What I do know is it's not helpful to tell somebody to have compassion for somebody that hurt them.
Mm.
What is helpful is to teach people to have compassion for themselves as a wounded person. If you tell somebody, well, you know, your dad, he beat you, but he was beating himself. It works with some people, but on the yes, large scale, it's not that effective. But it's easier to say, well, then have gentleness towards your human experience of suffering. And a lot of us suffer at the hands of other people. So there's compassion for that. That's more facilitative than the other.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. I'm wondering what you would suggest for someone who wanted to, say, you know, engage in some kind of forgiveness practice. Are there steps? Are there recommendations?
I've written the best-selling self-help book on forgiveness. I mean, I'm just letting you know, my books have sold about 250,000 copies. But Forgive for Good details a seven-step process. If you looked me up on the web, there's lots of YouTube videos of me speaking about the 9 or 7 steps to forgiveness. There's 2 or 3 empirically validated forgiveness processes. I have one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Emright has one of them from the University of Wisconsin. And there's another one from Old Dominion University, I think. And that's it. There's 3 of us over the years who have empirically validated our process of forgiveness through research.
Yeah, okay. Well, we will refer our listeners to your book, and I'll make sure that those are available. We can mention those at the end. Well, is there anything else you want to say about this whole subject? I mean, I think it's very important. We don't hear enough about it, maybe. I don't know. So I think it's worth reinforcing and putting in front of people. Is there anything in closing you want to say to our listeners about forgiveness?
The two things that are most important, not most important, but are important to me when I remind people is, one, forgiveness is a learnable skill.
Mm.
It's not esoteric. You don't have to be religious. You don't have to believe in anything outside of your own efficacy. So it's a teachable and learnable skill. That's critical. The other is, it's related to improved physical and emotional well-being.
Ah, yeah.
So people who are more forgiving tend to be healthier. People who give up their grudges show improvements in physical and emotional well-being. Unforgiveness is a real drain on the system.
Yeah, I would imagine it's very toxic over time to be holding on to all that baggage or stuff, not being able to let go. Yeah.
And it's stress. It's very stressful holding a grudge.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot of psychic energy. So I'm assuming that in your books, you go through some of the processes then that people can go through. So yeah,
that's what Forgive for Good and Forgive for Love are. They're self-help books on how to do this.
Great. All right, Dr. Luskin. Well, let me just take a moment to thank you for sharing your wisdom, your experience, personal, professional, academic with us, and wish you well.
Thank you, John.
For more podcasts or information on educational programs at Sophia University, go to www.sophia.edu. Thank you for listening.